In 2022, a pair of film nerds were sent from YouTube to an audio format by editing equipment they couldn't fix. These geeks promptly escaped from month-long delays to your favorite podcasting app. There, still wanted by listeners, they survive as critics of fortune. If you're choosing a film, if no one else has heard of it, and if you can Google them, maybe you can hire the real geeks.
Welcome to Real Geeks. I am Crash and Burn, and with me as always is Mike Montgomery.
Oh, and I am a damn happy man right now.
It's with good reason, but also very silly. My God, very, very silly. I mean, we've watched some goddamn ridiculous shit on this channel, and I don't know if anything can really top what we just saw. And by that, I mean, like, Escape to Witch Mountain is old-time silly willy, bad cheesy effect nonsense. And this might top it in terms of just, like, ham and cheese, because it does it, but it does it on the level of competency that is almost terrifying. This is a movie that happens when very talented, very smart people decide to be very stupid, decide to be intentionally stupid, decide to have stupidity with agenda.
Now, first and foremost, before we get into all the details, quick shout out to friend of the show and former co-host Natasha Chikowski, who handled a lot of the technical stuff on the intro that you just heard, and that just made my heart and my inner child so very giddy.
And it may also foreshadow what we are watching, in case anyone didn't have reruns where they grew up. Today, we are talking about the A-Team. It's the A-Team. What the fuck else do you want? Here's the trailer. Fuck you.
This court is rendering guilty verdicts for this Alpha Unit, or A-Team, and incarceration in maximum security facilities for 10 years.
We are innocent.
Where's the plan, boss?
You actually sound worried.
Those men were your responsibility. Find them.
Hell no. I ain't stepping foot in any type of aircraft.
Man up! Get in the plane! We gotta finish the escape! Man up and get in there!
Putting the team back together.
So how do you plan on stopping them?
I'll sweat them.
This just got exciting.
I'm BA. You're gonna be unconscious.
Just a heck of a beautiful place. Is it timeshare? I'd love to get in.
Good morning.
He tried to escape by jump-starting an ambulance
with a defibrillator.
Clear.
My kind of guy.
I told you the mission wasn't over.
What are we talking about? Clean records?
We were set up.
It's payback time.
Oh, hell yeah, Hannibal.
kill you, fool!
You can't park there. That's a handicap zone.
Yeah, it's the motherfucking A-Team. Like, I'm really pleased that over a decade ago, Fox went ahead and... Yeah, it was Fox. Fox went ahead and made a Bad Batch movie, IRL. That was very considerate of them in, you know, in presumption of the sale to Disney. Good on them. yeah. This might be one of the best adaptations of 60s and 70s and 80s era. Like, you know, like classic TV movie adaptation charm. You've got Charlie's Angels. You've got the Avengers. Not the Avengers. The Avengers. You know, the Avengers. Not the Avengers. The Avengers.
Cinematically speaking, not the good one.
Not the good one, but... Overall, I do prefer the Avengers to the Avengers if I had to have, you know, like a gun against my head. You know, the Mod Squad, all of that goddamn nonsense whenever, you know, Starsky and Hutch, but at least that, you know, had the decency and dignity to be a comedy. You know, an overt comedy. This is possibly one of the better versions of that genre of trying to remake boomer nonsense for modern audiences. Obviously Charlie's Angels was more successful. Yeah. I mean, it got a sequel. Yeah. And it was kind of a little bit of a late 90s zeitgeist. There's something akin to it where it's like you take Charlie's Angels, you take like Girl Power of Spice Girls, and you can get a general idea of what the late 90s was like.
Yeah, no, that's true. And yeah, the A-Team movie was not as successful as it should have been.
No.
And I actually do have a very valid theory for why that happened, which we'll try to get into later. But first of all, as I said at the end of last week's episode, how the fuck does a 2010 movie connect to my childhood?
Now, by all means, like this one's all yours. I watched a couple of episodes of the A-Team when I was a kid, and it was like, okay, that's neat, but I'm just not feeling it. I don't know what it was. I'm just not feeling it. And so, by all means, this is you. This is all yours. Lead us down the journey of why the fuck we watch the A-Team.
So, the original show ran from, I believe it was 1983 to 1987. And so this was basically right at the perfect point of my childhood. So I grew up with this show. I was a kid during the height of Mr. T's popularity. I had a toy van. I had at least a BA action figure. And, like, this is Mr. T. Gold chains, larger than life. If you were a child, you were instantly this man's best friend in the most wholesome way that he could possibly be.
Yeah, it helped definitely that he also was a very savvy businessman and sold himself essentially as a cartoon whenever possible. And
yeah.
That includes literal comics and cartoons of him. So... truly, like, this was a guy who, he used to be a professional bodyguard and, like, tough. He would beat the fucking shit out of you. That's what Mr. T did. Yeah. And he became, like, a children's superhero comic book kind of character in real life who parents would not hesitate to leave their kid with.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so, of course, I grew up, I move on from the show. I eventually go to a community college in Truro, and as I'm walking around residents, there's a few other residents in the lounge watching the A-Team on Spike TV. So I go to join them, and I fall in love all over again. Except this time, I've switched from a BA fan to Hannibal. Like, Hannibal has basically become my life coach. Like, this man is the type of leader where no matter how shitty things are, no matter how many things go wrong, everything will work out no matter what. It is all part of the plan. And that is a philosophy that, make no mistake, will get you through a lot of things in life.
I just want to imagine the couple of episodes where someone gets their shit rocked. Just like, they put the boots to me for an hour. It's like, yeah, it was all part of the plan. Really? You planned that, you fucking prick?
Oh, like, he literally just be like, yeah, no, well, it all worked out. We're saying everybody's good. The job's done.
Ah, yes, the ends always justify the means. Hey, Hannibal.
Exactly. The credits would roll and life was good.
It was the 80s. You don't think about repercussions.
Damn straight.
No such thing as blowback. No such thing as blowback.
So, and then we skip ahead to about, I think it was 2009 when this movie was first announced.
Mm-hmm.
And I am downright giddy with excitement, but I'm also going, I know exactly what I want from this movie. And this is the fascinating thing with, because this movie is technically critic proof.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wanted a story that didn't make a lick of goddamn sense. I wanted action sequences where things are being kitbashed or used in things in ways that they damn sure were not meant to be.
Fair enough.
I knew the formula, and as I've always said, if you're remaking something, I don't want a direct remake, but if you can bring over the spirit of the original property, if you can give me the feel of what was originally done, and also do your own thing, that's what I want.
Yeah, it's about, like, follow the formula, but then play with the formula. Have,
exactly.
Have more of a perspective on it, but you have to make sure that the skeleton is the same. And yeah, this film feels like an overly long episode of the A-Team. Like, they had to keep writing. The episode's not done yet. It feels it like, the best way to picture it is like the cartoon character on the front of a steam engine laying track desperately with the train, like, literally, yeah, right behind them. Because, yeah, this film is nonsense, but nonsense in the way of, like, it's watching improv scenes go on too long. And if you think about where it began and where it was 5 minutes ago and where it was a minute ago, and then you compare it to where it's going, and you're just like, this has nothing to do with anything. This is chaos. This is out of control. And the beauty of why it works here is, I think, the shots and the pacing and the literal way that the madness is composed feels more competent than what is literally happening, like what the story says is happening. And so you subconsciously, some part of you is like, it's okay. It's okay that it's stupid. Look at this sequence. You can't tell me this sequence wasn't, you know, meticulously planned, unless, of course, it's just madmen behind the camera.
Which, let's be honest, if you're doing the A-Team, you need both.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's a moment later on in the film when the structure or the veracity, no, actually the kayfabe of one of Hannibal's plans kind of collapses, and or the overall plan, maybe it was faces. I can't remember at this point because it all becomes a blur of wonderful nonsense. Wonderful nonsense. But
tell me which plan and I can tell you whose it was.
I don't even know. It was just a feeling I got while something was happening. And it's like, okay, no, I only later, like this late in the film, do I get the feeling that instead of coming up with a clever plan in their story, they rush to the end of something and then work their way back to create a clever plan. And you can feel the difference. You can tell. And I was just very impressed to have noticed that so far into the film that I'm sure it was there the whole time, but it's like, this film is so competently done on a technical level of frenetic nonsense and spiritual, referential, and reverential like respect of the original property, that the fact that it is essentially hollow does not matter.
No. Like, in a lot of ways, the original A-Team was essentially the 80s equivalent of the Fast and the Furious franchise.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
Like, you are not there for deep and well thought out stories. You're there to have a good time.
That would be the best crossover. You get to like Fast and the Furious 13 or something, and they're just like getting really desperate. Have them team up with the A-Team. No, the A-Team's going to stop them first because they've been like told that they're terrorists or something. Then they team up against the actual terrorists. Yeah. It was like some Terminator version of The Rock. That's what's in my head. You remember Cyborg Superman? It's that, but The Rock. Anyway.
And I even just in terms of a remake and references to the original show, one thing I have to give this movie credit for is some of the entire opening sequence is pretty much just there to do nods to the original show. And some of those are flat out. Like, you get the van from the original show. And I know that Dwight Schultz and Dirk Benedict did show up for cameos. Mr. T was invited, but he turned it down with his logic being, well, if I come, then the focus will be too much on me, and I wanted to stay on these actors and let them do their own thing, which, on the surface, sounds arrogant as hell.
The funny thing is, I heard a different story about that. He outright said, if I'm not B.A. Baracus, then I'm not appearing in your shit.
Well, that is also possible, because I do remember...
That sounds very tea.
No, you're not wrong, because... Like, I can also see that logic, because I did also read from a number of fans when the movie was announced, and casting hadn't all been announced yet, they were pushing for Mr. T to reprise his role in the new movie.
Which, like, at that point, he would have been 70?
If I remember right, I think he would have been just young enough that you could do it. It could work, but it would not be the best choice.
Yeah. I mean, I like the choice they went with. MMA fighter Rampage Jackson. I don't know any of his fighting career, but like, he was good in this. He usually, when you get like a fighter who doesn't necessarily have much acting like experience, I have no idea how much acting experience he has, but I'm just going to assume as an MMA fighter he probably didn't have much.
No, if I remember right, this was his acting debut.
He does a great job. Like, yeah, it's not that it's the most complicated character, it's B.A. Baracus, but they give him more than jokes of a personality. This is a great example of how silly Willy and brilliantly well done this film is. B.A. Baracus has an entire spiritual journey in this film.
Yeah.
Where he comes to like respect life and not want to harm life, and like he's a vow not to kill, and it's very serious and all that. And through the remainder of the film, he learns the joy and pleasure of dropping a man on his head to break his neck again. And it's just, It's a brilliant reverse ethical character arc that you can only do one with a character who is such a cartoonish form of good that the fact that he just his character arc and growth is him learning to murder again. You know, like it takes a very special kind of like 80s character, 80s comic book cartoon character to be able to do that. And you have to know that you're doing it to not fuck it up. Again, this is a brilliant film, technically, that is dumb as fuck.
But also with BA story arc, I think that's where the differences in this film compared to the show work in the movie's favor.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's say hypothetically, they did just put Mr. T back in as BA.
Yes.
And I think if they do that right away as a fan, if you see that, you're going into the movie with different expectations. And that arc doesn't work.
No, because like it would make much more sense for him to reach the point of like peaceful New Worf. It's New Worf. And for him to suddenly revert at the end, it would have been comical. It would have been very, very shocking relatively. But it would have ruined the moment. Mr. T learning to cause pain again is very sinister. There's something about that that just feels very sinister. Whereas Rampage Jackson learning to hurt a man with his heart again is just go get him, champ.
it's I think BA initially rejecting violence and then coming to accept that sometimes violence is necessary.
really over the top violence is necessary. Drop that man on his head.
But also with the way Liam Neeson is playing Hannibal,
gleefully,
his Hannibal is more where George Peppard's version was supreme, unflappable confidence. Neeson's is almost this karmic, like the universe has a plan for everything.
Yeah.
And I think because he's playing Hannibal that way, his interaction with BA toward the end of that arc works a lot better.
Yeah, and I think that it also is the only way for that character to work. Because, well, you know, as with the plot, the original characters they're 2.5 dimensional. You know, they're 80s dimensional. They're not really full characters. They're consistent because they're so simple. And so Hannibal was very straightforward and consistent because it was like his character always adhered to rules. And I don't mean like he chose an ethos or something. I mean like when they wrote him, you don't break these rules. He's always right. He's always got a plan in motion. He's that, you know, like these are things. He's always confident. Now you have to make a more interesting character because the movie's longer. The audience is smarter. You're not doing an overt parody. You're trying to do a revved up, you know, version of the original in a modern action style. And you've got Liam fucking Neeson playing the part, which is like, you got to give him something to do for the love of God.
Yeah, and the second you cast him, and in all honesty, from this cast list back then, I think Liam Neeson mostly got this because he's the biggest name on the cast list.
Yeah.
Which I even back then, I was fine with, because it was like, you got to have at least one name actor.
I suppose at this point, Bradley Cooper wouldn't really have popped yet. He would have done a couple of the Hangover films by now, but he's not you know, Bradley Cooper yet.
No, yeah, the first Hangover was like a year before.
Okay, yeah, so we're not at like Oscar nominee or award winning, I can't remember which. Yeah, okay. So we're not at full Bradley Cooper. He's just kind of second fiddle Bradley Cooper.
Oh, he's at this point very much still a supporting actor. Like he's not at what was it? Yeah, he's nowhere near Silver Linings Playbook or is it American Sniper I'm thinking of?
Yeah, American Sniper.
Yeah.
Or
that's it. A Star Is Born.
Yeah.
At this point, I think you can kind of see the potential for those roles because he has some great comedic line delivery.
I mean, that's the thing. Looking at this film now, you can't tell that he was just considered a supporting actor. It feels, especially the dynamic with Hannibal, it feels a lot closer to George Clooney and Brad Pitt in the Oceans movies, where it's like, ostensibly, these films are about these two guys and their friendship, and the rest of it spirals out.
Okay, funny story, and thank you so much for bringing up George Clooney, because I have read that apparently one of George Clooney's dream roles was Hannibal Smith.
I can see that. All you need to do is like spray a little more gray into his hair.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, I could see it and I thought about it. And normally I am always 100% for actors getting the role where they're just like, I would absolutely love to do this.
Yeah.
But like you said, in George Clooney's case, I thought about it and I felt like with Danny Ocean, we've already seen his Hannibal.
Yeah, I would say that if it was necessary to do it, Liam Neeson is the Hannibal of the late 2000s, early 2010s. He was great in it. Fantastic. But yeah. George Clooney would have been the Hannibal for the 90s.
Yeah.
Like, they would have leaned into more of the camp, I feel. It's not that this doesn't have camp. This is, you know, zany goofball nonsense. But the literal camp factor of it, the silliness that the 90s did so well, that's where you get George Clooney.
Oh, yeah. No, I could totally see that. And I think 90s George Clooney would work better just because at that point, if nothing else, we have not already seen him do that role.
Yeah. This film's a very simple film. They get, so first of all, prologue, they meet. That's nice. They become a team. They have adventures off screen, over there.
And I was mentioning the references earlier. And in terms of references, I applaud this movie for the sheer subtlety. Because in that opening sequence where they meet and come together, you see the standard references of, you get to see the van again.
Mm-hmm.
The assault rifle that Hannibal is using is the rifle from the original show. But also, conceptually, that opening sequence is the equivalent of Mexican Sleigh Ride, the pilot episode of the original show.
And then I assume there was 80 episodes after that.
After that,
96. I don't know why they fucked it up at 80 then, because they say, you know, 8 years and 80 missions later. Why not just say 8 years and 96 missions later, so you get pilot plus 96? I literally thought
that would have been, yeah.
The second it said 80, I was just like, oh, that's how many episodes there must have been of the original show, because that's where you put that kind of reference. That's the purpose of that. Anyway.
You know what? I can help you out though, because I can bring that number down to 80.
Okay.
And I can do that because, of course, the core concept of the A-Team is this four-member unit that was framed for a crime that they didn't commit.
Yeah.
They're on the run from the government, and also quick side note, the concept of the A-Team, that is an actual thing that actually existed in like the Vietnam War era.
Neat.
But season, I refuse to acknowledge season 5 of the original show.
Hmm.
Because for season 5, they changed the concept so that they've been captured by the government and are doing missions for the government.
Okay, so theoretically, that could be after, you know, or like during their internment or what have, or this movie could represent yeah. it. Okay, I'll accept that. I'll allow it.
Yeah, and
judges say yes.
And like also, there's a simple fact that this movie is an origin story for the A-Team to the point that you could watch the movie, then start the original show.
Yeah.
And if you in your head replace every mention of the Vietnam War with the Gulf War,
yeah,
it works.
Yeah, the second Gulf War though. This movie was in pre-production yeah. so long that it was originally going to be set during the first Gulf War, and Ice-T was going to be, and Ice Cube was going to be in it. To which then I must wonder. I must wonder, is it We Three Kings or Three Kings?
Three Kings.
Is Three Kings originally supposed to be the A-Team? Because it's like kind of the same plot. It's about stealing money back from Iraq.
Yeah. And yeah, like conceptually, yes, but also I'm going to say it. Ice Cube is the better actor.
Yes.
Rampage Jackson is the better BA.
Yes, because he would have overacted it. And I don't mean like he would have been eating he would have been chewing the scenery or going ham or anything. No, I mean he would have brought too much to it. It needs to be toned down a lot in terms of like human acting capability, because it remains even in this more complicated form a Saturday morning cartoon character.
Oh yeah, besides if you need somebody for chewing scenery, I'm sorry, but that's what Patrick Wilson is there for.
Yeah,
no, so that's already covered.
He's really going at it, ain't he? Wow. And like, I know that's what the character's supposed to do. It's a very 80s character where it's like, okay, you're just intentionally annoying. That's a choice. Then you think about it and it's like, there was a lot of characters in the 80s like that. I wonder what the hell that was about. And then you remember that like mental health was not something anyone in the 80s really thought about unless you could afford a shrink. Huh.
Exactly.
Well, I'm sure that doesn't mean anything. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the plot, like I said, this is a total origin. This is the origin story. Because originally it was, they went on a mission to rob a bank in Vietnam.
Hmm.
They get back to the base to find out the base has been hit. It was actually General Morrison who gave them the orders, but he's been hit. He's been killed. All records of the mission are lost. And that's how they end up getting arrested and convicted for the robbery.
So same story, no conspiracy.
Basically.
That's cool. I mean, I admire the writers of this, and obviously, like it, like I said, it being in pre-production for about 2 decades, there's commitment to there, and there's fandom there, and so, you know, I admire them finding a way to take the original stories and actually have them work in and be adaptable. That's great. Like, as someone who doesn't know the history of the A-Team nearly as well, like only in passing, I simply miss them You know, like I was born in 1985, so it wasn't a thing by the time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and so you see it on reruns, and it's just, eh. Now, you know, okay, so a thing used to happen where culture would move on and shows would become unpopular as soon as they ended. In fact, you would become a loser, dork, wiener kid if you watched a show that had ended, and people made fun of shows that had ended. Like, remember all the jokes about, like, Star Wars in the 80s? Like, I think around 1984 or 1985, everyone went, hey, actually, that shit was fucking ridiculous, and just started ripping on it until around 1995.
Yeah, and frankly, if you don't remember those jokes, just go watch a few episodes of The Big Bang Theory. You'll get all of them.
Yeah. So it becomes this weird thing of, like, even though I only missed the A-Team by a couple of years, and now that would mean nothing, it means that it was completely fucking divorced from my world.
Yeah.
So watching this, I don't know any of that, and I'm just enjoying it, and just it's nice to be able to look at it and be like, oh, so it is more complex than it looks. That's cool. Again, it's like a finely layered Swiss-built clock, but when the cuckoo comes out, it's a guy pulling his pants down.
I mean, honestly, that's pretty accurate. I mean, if they could work it into a mission somehow, that is something, that cuckoo clock is something I could, honest to God, actually see the A-Team doing just to annoy whoever it is they're up against.
Yeah, this film is a very odd thing because, yeah, I gotta respect the technical craft. And I enjoyed the fuck out of it. I don't want to say the story because some of that's not a story, but
yeah,
but what it is fun.
Yeah. And also speaking of fandom and love of the property, Charlton Copley, you magnificent bastard. That was the greatest portrayal of Howling Mad Murdoch since Dwight Schultz. I don't know of anyone else who could do it. Like, Copley, apparently when he was growing up in South Africa, watched the A-Team almost religiously and was probably the fastest yes of anyone in the cast.
Okay.
Like, he's basically, oh, you want me to play Murdoch and just go crazy on screen? All right, I am down for anything.
Yeah, that is breathtakingly incredible. Yeah, speaking of annoying fucking characters. it's actually really impressive how they were able to, again, it comes back to technical craft. Because it feels like utter chaos that shouldn't work. It's like someone doing an impersonation of Robin Williams. And yet, it fits. It makes sense. Yeah. And I think it's because the character dynamic, the team dynamic and everything, is that they roll with it. In the prologue, there's a little bit of friction between them. You know, like, they don't trust each other. They're all a little fucking crazy. Everything's a little off. But by the time you reach, like, 80 missions later, and they're in Iraq, and they're having the barbecue, and Face and
Murdoch.
Face and Murdoch just start singing in Spanish at the same time, and it's like, yeah, these two don't even need to, like, look at each other anymore to know what the other is doing or thinking. And that kind of chemistry, like, fantastic chemistry between the cast, but more importantly, fantastic chemistry between the characters. Because
yeah,
he would not work without all the other characters supporting and enabling him in a way that is entirely legitimate and like they're not doing it because they find it funny. There's no cruelty to it. They're 100% behind him being a fucking idiot. there's a moment when I think BA is just like working on some machine and he's covered in blue paint and doing the entire Braveheart speech. And yeah. At no point is he told to knock it off. At no point, there's nothing. There's not even like a side look. This is a pointless fucking scene in which he is just riffing. And it works entirely because BA is there allowing him to do this in his space and just be like, yeah, that's him. I'm not going to ask him to stop being himself. And that apparently that's how you get a character like that to work. It's like, what the fuck?
Well, two things. One, that back and forth is pretty much from the original show.
Mm-hmm.
Like Mr. T would get more irritated with Murdoch, but it was always that I'm really annoyed with you, but I'm gonna let it go.
And like I think they did that well in this, yeah. Where they don't, or he doesn't get annoyed at him when he's being himself passively. It's always when he's being himself and he intentionally goes out of his way to mess with BA that he then responds. So he can be an annoying, weird jackass around BA so long as he doesn't interfere or touch. You know, it's this great, great rule. And so it creates, I don't know, it just has a very fantastically like woven bit of character, like chemistry. You can feel the years between them without having to see it.
Yeah, and a lot of that character chemistry, I think, comes from one small, tiny thing that they do during the opening act that a lot of movies to this day don't bother to take the time to do. Which is, for example, when Hannibal and BA meet.
Mm-hmm.
And Hannibal is basically carjacking him. And they are arguing and fighting until Hannibal sees BA's Army Ranger tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
And that they bond over the fact that they're both Rangers. And then they meet up with Face. Bond over the fact that all three are Rangers. Meet Murdoch. Eventually... Because there's an entire sequence where Murdoch has to give BA PTSD first.
Oh, yes. Well,
but
done.
Again, eventually they all bond over the fact that they're all Army Rangers. They've all been through similar things. And they actually have all this common ground.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's just that one teeny tiny little thing that goes so much toward building the characters, and most writers just don't bother to do.
Yeah, I think the tendency currently is to allow that to play a role in efficiency for the plot. So you unite people with an agenda. The agenda is what unites them. Like, what brings the Guardians of the Galaxy together? An agenda. You know, get the stone. And so this being a uniting force without an agenda, it's purely like, oh, we all did a similar thing in our past. Cool. It's theoretically in the past. We could all go forward and be good friends and open a hardware store. And, you know, the friendship would still be stable regardless of where they are, because it's based on a thing in the past, not an agenda in the future. And I feel like that just makes for richer characters. Instead of being this always constant need to have, like, you know, the plot moving forward constantly. Everything has to feed the plot. The agenda has to feed the plot. Their friendship has to feed the plot. Oh, why do these people hang out with each other? No, now they're family. And they'll never betray each other ever, ever, ever.
Yeah. If there was one thing that I would change, and in the grand scheme of things, this is just a really small thing, I would have found some way to give Jessica Biel more to do.
Yeah, she feels like she is being led along at the very end of this long tether of a plot. Possibly even behind the audience. It's a very strange film that goes out of its way to contrive itself. Because it has a very straightforward, simple plot, and thus it has to find ways to make that confusing intentionally. Not only so that you don't think these brilliant characters are also stupid jackasses, but so that the audience isn't sitting there going, okay, all right, next. Yes, then that happened. And the problem is she almost feels like an extra character in this. She's kind of tacked on. You know, she plays a role, but it's a role that could have been like rolled into another character at some point. And actually she plays two different roles that could be like amalgamated or sent off and split and turned into two lesser characters. But more importantly, I don't know. The only way I can describe it is if she's sleepwalking, then what the hell is the point of having that entire subplot there? Like, you should remove the entire, like, interagency subplot. But as is, she should be the one who fucking figures everything out. She should have been the one breaks the cycle of the plot. She should have been the one who informs literally everyone of, and it's, ultimately, it should have been her plan in the end that, like, everything, everyone else's plans and Hannibal's plans and all of it. And it's like, no, she's actually the brilliant one. She's not trying to steal anything, but she, you know, she's making sure that, you know, this comes to the correct end. And she's the one who breaks them out, is, you know, as in the actual movie. I want a secret Amanda Waller. And that's what we should have had, and we did not get.
Well, I think she's supposed to be more or less the equivalent of Amy or Tanya from the original show, who were female reporter characters that ended up embedded with the A-Team. In Tanya's case especially, just because reasons.
These people are fugitives from the federal law again?
Yep.
Okay, just checking. All right.
I mean, it was 1983. In the case of Amy's character specifically, she hires them in the pilot episode.
Yeah.
And ends up convincing them to let her stay on with them and write stories about their adventures and essentially try to create a positive image for them in the eye of the public. So it kind of works.
I believe that's called aiding and abetting.
I mean, true. But then with Tanya, who later comes in because the actress who played Amy left the show, they just say, yeah, it's this character now. And it's like, really?
Yeah, like, there's no good way necessarily to have pulled that off. I mean, you'd have to essentially do Lois Lane, and then at that point it just invites Lois Lane
since. But with Beale's character, Carissa Sosa here, what I was noticing when I watched the movie for the review, she seemed to be able to almost anticipate Hannibal.
Hmm.
And I'm kind of going, I wish that there was some way that they could have played with that more.
Yeah, she should, like, that's exactly. She should have been the one who worked out the final full play, and that includes Hannibal's plans. You know, it's like, okay, and Hannibal will do this, and I'll make sure that that works in this. Yeah, yeah, she should have been the master puppeteer above all, revealed in the very last moment when she's like whispering sweet nothings and lockpicks to Face.
Yeah, and that also could have gone toward the final act of, in that you would have her anticipating everything Hannibal is going to do. But with Face coming up with the plan for the final act, that changes things up.
Changes things up, but imagine if she was even like, of course I knew what you would do. You're so predictable.
I mean, yeah, that all, going that way does also work. And there's also the simple fact that out of everybody, Sosa has the single most famous, most quoted line of the entire movie.
Hey, get under the main gun! There's a leak a half mile away from this position!
What the hell am I trying to hit?
Trust me! Rotate the turret 82 degrees!
Fire no!
Fire! Boom!
Trying to shoot down that other drone?
No. They're trying to fly that tank.
He's flying the tank!
You can't fly a tank, fool!
Rotate 16 degrees!
Fire!
That is a fantastic moment. That's a great sequence. It's stupid as fuck. If you try to explain it to someone who has not seen the movie, they will cringe. But it's just so damn fun and such a absurd extension of the idea that Hannibal can plan for everything. He's sitting there doing fucking like mass and velocity equations in his head. Yeah. It's just, no, this is so dumb. It works perfectly. I love that moment. It is stupid as fuck. it's the epitome of this movie. It literally is the epitome of this movie. If you needed to just explain what the A-Team is, like even the concept of it, it is four combat idiots in a tank, one screaming about being in the air while they fire the big fucking gun to fly it. All right. Yeah, you know what? I can't wait for the Bad Batch reference. It's gonna come. It has to come. They have to fly a tank.
Yeah, and I would almost in a way call it empowering, because you have all of these male officers and investigators trying to figure out how to capture them, what they're gonna do. How did they break out of prison, yada, yada. And she is straight up telling them, watch these guys. They specialize in the ridiculous. They're not attacking the drone. They're flying the tank. She gets it to a degree that no male officer does.
Yeah, everyone after that should have listened to her exclusively, because the moment you prove, no, seriously, they were flying a tank, and so they survived this plummet, should just be like, all right, yep, no, she can conceive of things we cannot. Tactically, she's now calling the shots, because we are out of our fucking depth.
And I mean, this was the military, so of course none of them are going to actually listen to her. However,
I really enjoy that. Like, you know, we came up with a couple of flaws, but this is a film that is just dumb fun. You're going to have fun. Fun will be had. You have to be a real goddamn stick in the mud to not enjoy this. It's not even like for a like a guy action film. It's not even very like misogynistic.
No.
It's rather straightforward, enjoyable. Oh God, I almost want, dare I say it? Family fair?
Yeah, that's the fascinating thing, because you read a lot of the reviews from critics and they complain about the over-the-top violence, how it's nothing but overly glorified action sequences with no plot whatsoever, and...
Oh, so it's an adaptation of the A-Team.
Exactly! As I said at the start, if this plot made sense, it would not be a well-done A-Team plot.
Yeah, and the amount of violence... Like, violence has to be taken contextually. It's not just a point or a line. You have to look at that shit in, like, on three axes. And you can have a lot of violent action, but if it doesn't lead to gore, it doesn't mean shit. And that's what the A-Team legendarily excelled in. Just fucking tons and tons of bullets fired off, and no one, not a soul getting hit. If you, it's one thing not to hit someone, which is what the old one was classic for. But this one, you know, people got shot, but you don't see gore. You don't see viscera. It's very tame. So it doesn't matter how over the top the violence is. If you don't have the gory payoff, it's all still PG, baby. It doesn't matter that a fucking truck lands on a guy. If you don't see him go splat, nothing. You know, emotionally, you're not going to have that response. It's still fun.
Yeah, and, you know, like you said, there's a shit ton of bullets flying everywhere. Stuff's blowing up left and right.
Mm-hmm.
But it's frankly so sanitized compared to a lot of big budget blockbuster action films.
Yeah, like, I feel like for the last 20 years, films have really enjoyed their headshots. You know, you get one moment to be a little gory and you blow off a piece of someone's head. There's not even that in this. The most grotesque moment, I believe, would be when Guy drops, B.A. Baracus drops a guy on his head, like the security guy. And it's not like, yeah, it's, you know, okay, yep, you very clearly see him break his neck for like a split second, but there's no blood, there's no gore, it doesn't linger on it, and it moves on immediately. It's a very tame action film that is all very loud and over the top.
And actually, surprisingly enough, does also throw in a bit of social commentary. Because with the character Pike and his Black Forest goons, they were a real thing in the Gulf War.
Oh yeah, the Blackwater mercenary group was very much a real thing. And there's definitely a moment when you're watching this and you're like, yo, I'm pretty sure this actually happened. And the only difference is they got away with it because the A-Team doesn't exist. Anyway. Exactly. Womp, 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 womp.
But yeah, like I said, This is a perfect remake. This is the blueprint.
Yeah. This is how you should do it.
Yeah. Like, you have the subtle stuff of a movie that's basically opening with the pilot from the original show to a final action sequences where Face is playing the shell game with giant cranes. Because fuck you, it's the A-Team. Of course he is. fireworks start going off, which again, subtle reference, because there was an episode with a final escape sequence that took place in a fireworks factory. Oh, so that's basically what they did.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it concludes right back where the show begins, more or less. Like every episode with, so theoretically, you could just go on, which you have to, because though there was rumor of a sequel for this, it didn't make nearly as much money. Oh Lord, did it not make nearly as much money? This made less than 200 million on a box office of, or on a budget of about 100 to 115 million, I think. And that's not good enough.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah, no, it's not a bomb per se, but it didn't meet the threshold that it needed to meet. And here's the thing. I think if they had delayed the release of this movie, it could have had a bigger box office.
Why?
Well, my logic is this. Do you remember another comic book movie that came out in 2010? Called The Losers, about a four-person CIA unit that is framed for a crime they didn't commit and is being hounded by the government?
Yep.
Plot sound familiar?
Just a little bit. And yeah, so that becomes a cult classic, and this gets ignored because even though
No. The Losers bombed.
Oh yeah, but it became a cult classic. Yeah. Like that's
it. I don't know if it ever, I didn't know it became a cult classic, to be perfectly honest.
It did. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it became a cult classic, and this more or less got ignored and forgotten, even though this is the remake of the original approach for that basic team. Now I know, like, it's a trope. It's been done before, but it's the A-Team. They're the name of the fucking trope. And they got John Carter'd.
Yeah. Because I remember when the Losers came out, I saw what it did in the box office, and I got scared for the A-Team movie almost immediately.
Yeah, not a good sign, and ruins the approach entirely. Well, that sucks, but for anyone listening who is a fan of The Losers, and I know that you're out there because you people have filled the internet with GIFs, you fucking weirdos. check out The A-Team. Seriously.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
A fun movie. God damn, was this just a fun movie? You don't have to necessarily think during it, but there's enough going on that you can keep your brain busy. And all the performances are top notch. Everyone's having fun. Everyone except Jessica Biel. She seems annoyed by everyone.
She's, I think, doing what she's supposed to do. But like I said earlier, I think she would have loved to have been able to do more.
Yeah, yeah. Much, much more. Her character was capable of more, and there was space for it.
Oh, yeah. And, like, this is the Magnificent Seven.
More or less.
I remember I was listening to an episode of Junk Food Cinema where Cargill referred to it as being the Magnificent Seven. Like, this is that 4 versus 400 as a comedy. And I'm like, that may be the greatest description of this movie I've ever heard.
I guess at the end of the day, it all comes back to, like, Leonidas and Sparta at the gates of Thermopylae. It's all a trope, but done with a little bit of humor, you know. It can be fun. It can be fun. go tell the fucking Spartans. What is next? What are we watching next? Sparta demands to know.
Well, next up, we're going to blow off some steam as we check out the movie that I was putting my life on the line as a child to rent on a regular basis.
Interesting.
The purest, most unfiltered form of Arnold Schwarzenegger out there, Commando.
All right, then. Yes. you know, like immediately thinking about it, I have to consider that that is his purest form. Dang.
Yeah, that's, I have heard the movie described that way, and I was like, you know? It truly is. Because this is the same type of thing that he was doing in Predator, and to a lesser extent Terminator, but you're stripping away all the sci-fi elements, and it's just him?
Yeah. And yeah, oh my god. Okay. Yeah, I can't wait. All right. That's going to be fun. And if you think that's going to be fun, or if you are looking to get in touch with the A-Team, we have their forwarding address. So send us your email. Send that shit to...
We'll be able to connect you to Mr. Lee's laundromat in Los Angeles. And if you understood that reference, we are now friends. by emailing us at realgeekshfx@gmail.com. We can be reached on Twitter at realgeekshfx. If, for whatever reason, you want me directly, you can find me at the Maritime Lord on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, for as long as TikTok is around, unless Congress gets some common sense. Hive, Clapper, if I ever figure out if I'm going to bother to do anything with my Clapper account.
And I can be found on Twitter at Friday and Halifax and Crash and Burn everywhere else.
Still wanted by the government, they survive as soldiers of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can hire.